What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, number 206, Mental Health and Drug Abuse. We are talking with John Seiko. John is the head athletic trainer at Bloomfield Hills High School, the Michigan Bucks, which is a PDL team, or professional development league, there you go, and student athlete project coordinator for Birmingham Bloomfield Community Coalition. He presented a topic similar to what we're going to be talking about today at the NATA in 2015 in St. Louis. He's also been a two-time drug-free sport scholarship award winner and worked for 3 years with the Birmingham Bloomfield Community Coalition, or BBC, as the SAP coordinator in addition to the many other duties there at Bloomfield High School. Okay, I am your host, Jeremy Jackson. Sitting right beside me, I've got
Ariana,
Nelly,
Daniela,
and Tiana.
All right, and then we've got Diana on Skype. So if you want to use Skype to communicate or ask John some of those questions, you can use hashtag TheSMB, and then Diana will be able to see those and ask those questions there. This conversation will be available at sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/mentalhealth. So sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/mentalhealth. That'll be one word, mental health. And then that's where you'll be able to find the links and things that from our conversation with John today. Our hydration equipment supporter or sponsor for the Sports Medicine Broadcast is Frio Hydration. Email getfrio@friohydration.com to receive half off your graphics on your new hydration unit. Plus, that gives me extra stuff to give away to you as the listener. And in logged in live, we have logged in live.
We have Doc, Jason Moore, Blake, Melissa, and Tiffany.
All right. Thanks for joining us live. Make sure you have your questions ready for John and we'll get those asked and answered. Without much further ado, Ariana's got our first question.
Mr. Seiko, can you give us a brief history of your athlete and training career?
Go ahead, John.
I couldn't hear.
Oh, Mr. Seiko, can you give us a brief history of your athlete training career?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been an athletic trainer for about 11 years now. I started out working in Division I college, and then after that, I left that to work in a high school. Ever since starting in and with the college, I started working with the Michigan Bucks, who is a PDL team, semi-professional soccer team. So I've been working with them for about 11 years now. But I'm working more at the high school now. That's my true full-time job. So absolutely love working in the high school, but definitely noticed there's a lot more different social norms, you know, between the high school and the college. So that's why I got involved with the coalition in our community.
All right, so talk a little bit more about the coalition since you mentioned that.
Yeah, so about 3 years ago, we had a board member who was actually our assistant principal at the time. She was involved with the Community Coalition. What they do is promote substance abuse prevention. So a lot of the things that we do a lot of education going on in the community. We educate a lot of our middle school students before they go into the high schools. And then anything that seems to come out new or any types of drug trends, we're on top of that and we're out educating the community on different drug trends. One of the big ones a couple years ago was the K2 spice. We were out first thing in our community to try to educate everybody on the importance of not only using it, but there was a big push to not sell it in our community. We were able to get that out of our area. So that came to me about 3 years ago, and they wanted to put together what's called the Student Athlete Project, and where they take a lot of our education and we gear it towards our student athletes. You know, student athletes are about 60-70% of our student population in the area. And if we can educate those ones, those student athletes, you tend to have more of a following when an athlete in the school is following and understanding the importance of drug education and substance abuse prevention.
I got you. So you guys actually work with the middle school and educate them there, and then the high school. So you're working kind of all the way up the chain. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's a lot too. In our community coalition, we have 11 high schools that we deal with. And if you want to add three onto that, so we're probably adding, you know, about three times that with middle schools. So we're probably around 30 schools altogether in our community. You take a look at any other community coalitions, they're probably dealing with one high school and handful of middle schools. So we have a lot to do in our area. So it's a busy job on top of everything else that I do.
Well, apparently it's paying off as you guys have been able to kind of stop some of the drug trends and sales. So good work.
Thank you.
And why are you so passionate about this topic?
You know, I think part of my passion comes from my years as an athlete. I played college football, and I know the different ways I used and abused, you know, alcohol, you know, wasn't healthy. You know, I didn't know much about it. Working in Division I, too, was a very stressful job. You know, I loved working in it, but at the time, you know, it was great for a 22-year-old. And, you know, as I got a little bit older, the stress got to me. I realized that I had to do a different way of stress relief rather than what I used to do. You know, and then working in high school, moving over here, just to see the different social norms, you know, people thinking that drugs and alcohol are okay, or the kind of misinformation that we're getting, especially with marijuana research, you know, it's going legal in a lot of countries, a lot of states, a lot of states, a lot of communities, and not everybody's getting the right education when it comes to different types of legal drugs and illegal drugs. So, you know, I want to be kind of in the forefront of that. I think being an athletic trainer, you're going to be one of the first people to see and notice things with our athletes. And I wanted to be able to help students before they get into trouble, especially at the high school age. So we have such a great influence on our athletes. You know, I felt that would be a great way to help my athletes.
All right, so you mentioned that in college you used and kind of abused alcohol and that kind of thing. When you're sharing with the middle school kids, with the high school kids, do you tell that part of your story? Do you find that it helps pass along the message?
Yeah, you know, it depends on kind of my audience, I guess. When we do have our if we have like a presentation or something, it depends on the message we're trying to get across to. If it's a more of a, you know, a setting where I'm able to do that, I do try to pass along that message just so that they have, you know, kind of a real life experience. I'm not just somebody up there that's just kind of talking to them. I've gone through certain things, and you know, I've seen, you know, what it can do, not only on my side, but you know, you see people who've gone through problems and they're not healthy, and we make sure that our student athletes are healthy as much as possible.
Yeah, so for me, sharing the message, you know, I mean, obviously I can see what it does. I have family members that, you know, are addicted and have, you know, negative addictive behaviors, but personally I've never been drunk. I've never been addicted to anything like that. I don't smoke. I've never smoked weed, anything like that. And so I'm just wondering how my message would translate to these kids versus yours having some experience with some of that stuff. So, all right, cool. Thanks for sharing. All right. What are some of the things that you would like for athletic trainers to understand about mental health?
You know, I think we're learning a lot more about mental health. We're also learning a lot more about you know, the way the brain works, not only with concussion education, but, you know, outside of concussion education and outside of drug abuse and things like that, we're definitely learning how the brain reacts and how it works. So, you know, we're really great at referrals. You know, if somebody sprains an ankle or, if, you know, if they injure their knee pretty good, we're going to refer them out to somebody that is going to take care of them appropriately. You know, I think mental health is definitely an issue that we deal with at the high school level. It's definitely an issue that we're seeing more and more. You know, the stress that kids deal with nowadays is much more than what we dealt with in high school and in college. You know, so being able to appropriately handle certain things at an emotional level, and being able to recognize those things as the athletic trainer, as the person that's going to notice the student athletes, probably before many other people are going to notice them, is extremely beneficial for us.
You said they're dealing with more stress now than we were then. Why is that?
You know, it's hard to explain. You know, the stress to get into college is probably a lot greater. The stress to excel, you know, kids are doing more and more these days. And, you know, we talk about specializing in athletes or in athletics. You know, kids are doing more and more of that, where, you know, in the past it was, we were three sport athletes or two sport athletes and we're able to take time off. A lot of kids don't have time off. I know at our high school, it's a norm for our kids to participate in sports all the way up until about 9 o'clock at night. You know, they're getting home and doing homework all the way until 1 o'clock in the morning and then getting up for school at six, you know, in the morning and doing it all over again. when they're not able to appropriately de-stress from things, you know, they're on the back end with their mental health. It's not helpful for them.
And so just real quick, we start school at 7:15 and then get out at 2:30. What is the schedule for most of the schools there?
It's around the same time. Yeah, yeah, about 7 to 2:30 or so. You know, most schools follow that schedule.
Yeah, well, I know that there's people wanting to push the high school start time to like 9 or whatever for the kids' sleep pattern and that kind of thing. And, you know, I go back to, well, I did just fine getting up at that time. And, right, you know, but again, we're talking about mental health and issues like that. So, all right.
Yeah, I think with mental health, it all comes down to finding the appropriate stress relievers, you know, not doing as much, you know, realizing that playing sports from 3 o'clock to 9 o'clock or, you know, doing certain things, and or managing their time appropriately. That's where there should be an importance.
What are the most common issues athletic trainers miss when dealing with athletes?
I think a lot of times we miss emotional issues. You know, we're dealing with student athletes, you know, day to day. And a lot of time, the first thing we always ask them is how are you doing? And a lot of times it's just kind of a knee-jerk reaction for us to say those things. But, you know, are we really listening? You know, if somebody's coming up to us and saying, I had a really bad day today, you know, what's in that message? What's, you know, what are they trying to tell us? And just trying to be open to those student athletes. You know, the rate of suicide is actually going up. And a lot of times students just don't have the toolkits to manage stress. You know, and unfortunately suicides become an option for many people. You know, so to be able to listen and to, you know, appropriately refer them to help that's going to, you know, get them help, is an important thing for us to do.
All right. So talk more about if we need to stop and listen. You're the one saying that you're doing all your responsibilities there at the high school and you're doing all this stuff with the coalition. So you're already talking about how busy you are. You're, you know, you're a scholarship award winner. You're a drug-free, safe school sports, whatever the terminology was at the beginning, award winner. You're, you know, presenting at the NATA. You're already sitting here talking about how busy you are. And then you're saying that we need to slow down and listen. How are we going to do that?
You know, it's finding the balance within ourselves too, to do it. You know, you have to recognize when a student athlete is having a down day. You know, you're going to see those student athletes that are going to have, you know, a bad day, or, you know, or you just got to be able to sit and listen to them. I think taking the time out, is a better thing to do. It, there's greater reward than to kind of rush through things. You know, even if they do just had a bad day, and that's all they needed to say, you know, a lot of times that's all the students are looking for is just somebody, you know, a sounding board, because many times they don't get that. You know, everything's such a rush kind of, you know, world now, with everything that's going on, that actually having somebody to listen to them is a big thing. And I think we as athletic trainers do a really good job of listening to our athletes, and you know, the students are going to come right to us and ask for our help or just want to say something to us. So just slowing down and trying to take our time with our student athletes, as hard as it can be, and even as stressful as it can be for us too, it still is going to help our student athletes in the end.
All right. So Tiana,
yeah,
when do you feel listened to? Like if you're having a bad day, how would, if you came into my class or into the athletic training room, you're having a bad day or a good day, how am I going to show you that I'm listening to you?
I don't know, just like if I'm talking, just listen. You don't have to talk or anything, just be there.
So do I need to be looking at you?
Well,
does
yeah,
it matter
like,
if I'm doing
like
something else?
Like establish eye contact and like don't be doing other things while I'm talking to you, just things like that.
Okay, Ariana, same question. So if you're having a bad day or a good day and you just want me to listen to you, what's that going to look like for you?
Just like sitting down. I don't know.
No, this is just what it looks like. There's no wrong answer. This is just what it looks like for you so that I can understand and, you know, everybody listening understands as well.
Well, as long as you're listening and, like, paying attention, like, not being distracted, it's fine.
All right. Daniela, same question over there. What does it look like for you to be listened to?
Well, I guess... I'll be like, be thankful for like paying attention to me and like listening to me, like what's going on or something. I don't know.
All right. So from most of what I'm understanding is eye contact, not being distracted.
Yeah.
Right. And then, you know, it may be different for each person a little bit. Ariana said it doesn't matter as long as you're not necessarily distracted. You don't have to necessarily be looking at me, but you're giving me your attention. So does that seem about right there, John?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think the easiest way to understand that is, you know, the opposite of this right here is if I'm talking to you like this,
yeah,
then I'm not really talking to you. I mean, it's really simple. You know, I'm guilty of it. Many of us are guilty of it. You know, taking the time to actually put things down in front of us and, you know, like the girl said, you know, eye contact, appropriately listening to them. A lot of times we find ourselves mirroring things, and really all we're doing is just repeating them. You know, trying to turn what they're saying into words that we're able to say and you know, reiterate. Those are the right ways to listen to people. And I think that opens up the person to, if there is something else that they need to talk about, you know, maybe there is some, you know, risk of suicide, or maybe there is something going on at home, or, you know, they tend to open up more, and then, you know, they're going to give you information that you need to help them in the end. So.
All right. So giving them undivided attention. And one of the things I try to do is instead of sitting at the computer and just turning, I try to stand up and talk, and it just gives a little bit more of personal attention rather than me just sitting and like, you know, you're not worth getting up for. And that's not necessarily how I'm feeling, but it can be perceived that way. Like, but if I stand up, talk to you, or come over to where you are, then I made the effort to move forward, to get closer, right, to engage in a conversation. And, you know, sometimes they might just want to say hi, or they might want to do whatever, but I try to engage and give them an opportunity to listen, like you're saying, because they might not have anybody else at home. So, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's, you know, it could be as simple as just facing that person and squaring up your body with them. You know, that shows that you're open to what they need to say and what they need to communicate with you.
All right. So while we're kind of talking about, you know, being distracted with the phone, as we're discussing the mental health, does social media play into that as well? Because, I mean, honestly, I overhear a lot of conversations. I had this many likes, or, you know, did you see my Snapchat, or this or that? And so they're so much concerned with the statistics rather than the interaction. What are your findings on that?
You know, I agree with that. It's really all about the likes. You know, I'll joke with my students there. It's, you know, it's all about the likes, or, you know, it's all about, you know, what somebody said, or, you know, it's in itself, it creates more stress. You know, and the worst part about social media is that it gives people a platform to be mean and rude and not have to face the person, you know, when they do say something hurtful. You know, we're seeing a lot of problems with people creating what we've kind of coined a digital legacy, by saying bad things or putting out misinformation or, you know, being rude or mean. Those things are, you know, you may be able to delete those things, but they're going to hit some people in another way, or, you know, people are able to screenshot things. So social media, it's such a great thing, but it's such a bad thing at sometimes too. And especially when you have people that can be hurtful and mean, it can be such a bad thing. So,
hey, you know, I go back to, I'm not the vocal performer. So, but whenever I'm in church, I want to be able to like sing, you know, I want to be able to praise without worrying about how I'm feeling, or, you know, how I'm singing, or how maybe somebody else is hearing it. But, you know, growing up, some people were like, man, you can't sing, or you're terrible, or that kind of thing. And so even now, you know, 15 years later, that still affects the way that I am able to interact between me and God at church, where none of those people are even around. I don't even talk to any of those people still, but those words carry weight still. So, you know, I try to be encouraging, and I try not to be hurtful. Like if I'm joking around, I try not to say something that would be hurtful or could be taken that way. And like, oh, hey, you're looking ugly today, or something like that. You know, that girl, right, to a girl that's really going to last a long time, or it could possibly. So,
yeah, I think being encouraging as encouraging as possible, and, you know, not only our profession, but all around, is an incredibly powerful thing. You know, if you can touch somebody in an appropriate, you know, make them feel good, you don't even know how much that lasts with that person. You know, it could be the difference between something really good and something really bad. And I think if you're encouraging as possible, you know, that's going to help the student, or that's going to help the people around you. You know, because like you said, those little things that, you know, 15 years ago, they'll stick with you. You know, I know there's things that have stuck with me, and there's no reason for those things to have stuck with me at all. And, you know, it's just the difference of being encouraging and not being encouraging. And, you know, those are incredibly helpful to be those types of words.
All right.
Now, would you please discuss the science of addiction?
Yeah. So part of the addiction process with humans and with everybody is it's what's called the dopamine cascade. Whenever you introduce something, a substance that's going to make you feel really good, when I give my talks about you know, drugs and addiction, I always like to use pizza. I'm a big fan of pizza, and I'll go to, you know, as far as saying I'm addicted to pizza. If I have pizza every single night, it's because it makes me feel good. I love the way pizza tastes, and there's a chemical reaction that when you put something that you like into your body, it releases dopamine. So when you have dopamine, you actually have what's called dopamine receptors, and I like to think of them as these little golf tees. So when you have dopamine, they go onto the golf tee, and then once that feeling kind of goes away, it means that the dopamine, the receptors, they've all kind of worn away on the neural synapses within your brain. But the thing is that when you have something that you really, really like, or that your body or your brain really enjoys, the next time you want to put it into your body, your brain actually releases more receptors. So now, instead of releasing the same amount of receptors that had received the dopamine of the feel-good thing that you put into your body, you now have extra receptors. So now you have all these receptors that are kind of out there that are saying, I want something that makes me feel good too. Now, when you have that, that's your body kind of screaming and craving that addiction. It's craving that thing that you've put into your body that you really enjoyed. You know, there's science of different types of drugs. You know, even if we're talking nicotine, which is a legal drug, at about 15 minutes after use, you're at about 700% of that dopamine, that kind of feel good. You know, so who doesn't want to feel 700% happier or better, you know, after using something? But problem with that is that about after that's, you know, 15 to 25 minutes, there's a huge drop in that dopamine release and that cascading event. And then your body kind of goes back to saying, I kind of want to go back and feel that way. So if you ever seen somebody that smokes, they're usually lighting up a cigarette within, you know, 15 to 45 minutes after their last one. If you see somebody that's really addicted to smoking, you know, they're smoking often, very, very often. And then, you know, with other drugs like amphetamines and cocaine, there's a high increase of that dopamine. And then there's a drop off of it too. So once that drop off kind of hits, that's when your body's starting to crave more of that substance that you've put into your body. So it's kind of a short answer of how kind of drug addiction starts working.
Okay. So as we're discussing athletes and addiction, what are some of the things in dealing, how do we identify athletes who may be struggling with addiction?
You know, it goes back to the communication. You know, a lot of times we're going to see, maybe not a lot of times, but a majority of the time we're going to see, the athletes that are in trouble, as the students who are probably going through like the season ending, injuries or the long-term injuries. They start turning towards things that are probably going to try to make them feel a little bit better. You know, you have to take a look at the athletes and the different type of risks, you know, associated with sports. So, you know, baseball is a big one with tobacco. So, you know, you got to kind of look out for tobacco. You know, unfortunately, drug or alcohol is a big thing with football. It's still our number one used drug amongst all students and all student athletes. So, you know, you have to be aware of those things. And just, you know, if you hear students talking about it, you just have to properly educate them about things and how those drugs and those substances affect their body. So it depends on the sport, depends on the athlete. But really, it comes down to that individual care and asking questions if you do, you know, feel that something wrong is going on, or maybe you hear somebody talking about a party last weekend, or you know, or maybe sometimes you'll smell alcohol on different athletes or on an athlete. You know, it's trying to get them the help that they need, or you know, talking to them.
All right. So as you're sitting in your athletic training room, you hear the athletes come in. You know, they may mention a party, or you know, running from the cops because their party got busted, something like that. How do you handle that? Because you know, it goes back to the relationship. But if you just jump in and saying, you know, hey, that's really a bad idea, or that's, you know, that's dumb, I can't believe you do that. How do you handle that?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably exactly how I'll handle it right there. You know, you definitely have to be an advocate for the student. But you know, it's gaining that trust and making sure the student athletes have that trust within you. You know, if you turn around and probably go right to the cops, and you know, there's no, I guess, substantial evidence that they were at a party. They could just be talking about somebody else. But you know, just saying, hey, you know, what are you guys talking about? And if they do kind of confide in you about what had happened, it's talking them through, you know, what could have happened, you know, what could have happened worse. You know, somebody could be in jail, somebody could have gotten injured, somebody could have gotten hurt, you know, and, you know, just kind of talking to them about what could happen if, you know, if they continue to use certain drugs, or if they're continuing to use alcohol. You know, it's trying to give them as much information as possible. Not always going to stop things. I mean, that's the one of the harder things that we're going to kind of learn, you know, that I've learned, is that you're not always going to stop people from using drugs or alcohol, but it's giving them the right amount of education and the right amount of information so that they can make appropriate choices in their future.
So like for me, like I said, I never really was into smoking or drinking anything, but I did go to parties where right. There was high school kids, you know, smoking and drinking and even smoking weed, that kind of thing. So I was there just because that was kind of what, you know, people did,
right.
But I never did that stuff. But so I'm wondering how my story can relate, you know, or just say, hey, like, you know, I've been there and I've done similar things. To me, that kind of seems like the way to go. It's like I've done similar things, you know, I've been to parties and I know that it's fun and I know that it's the popular thing to do, but looking back on it now, you know, that it was really dangerous for me to be there with, you know, who knows what and that kind of thing. So is that kind of how you would handle that there?
Yeah, you know, it's trying to be relatable to the student athletes and students. You know, I think they kind of don't realize that we went to high school or that we went to college, you know, that we went through certain things. You know, all of a sudden we're just here working as an athletic trainer. But, you know, just to be relatable and say, hey, you know, I went through certain things. Probably went through worse things, probably went through things that weren't as bad as what you're going through, but I definitely understand. And I definitely understand the risks and the amount of times, you know, where I've gotten out of something that probably shouldn't have been in, or been in a situation that all of a sudden gotten, you know, it got really bad out of nowhere. And, you know, that's part of the message, is that you want to make sure that the student athletes are staying healthy and staying safe, and just kind of learning from, you know, the stories or anything that you can kind of relate to them, so that they do understand, you know, maybe that isn't a good thing that we're around, or, you know, maybe we should take a second to think about this before we go to another party or before we drink after a football game or something like that. It's giving them that information and that relatability for them to make great choices in the future.
So why are some people more at risk for addiction than others?
The best way to put it is, it's called the Swiss cheese example. So you ever taken a block of Swiss cheese and look at one end, and you have holes at one end, and you turn around to the other end, and those holes don't always go all the way through. You know, so if you take a block of Swiss cheese and you start cutting it into different slices, you notice that the holes don't always go through. So if you think of those slices as different things like genetics, education, parenting styles, development, the environment, you know, those different types of factors, if you put all those things together and the holes don't always go all the way through, that person doesn't have a high risk for addiction. So really what we're talking about is the different types of factors that go into everybody's makeup. Like I said, genetics, education, environmental factors, socioeconomic factors, their parenting styles, you know, family, dynamics, those all play a factor in them. I think the big thing to understand about addiction is that we really don't know what causes one person to be addicted versus another person. I said genetics is one of the bigger ones. So if you have somebody in your family that is an alcoholic or has problems with drugs or anything else like that, then there's probably a greater chance for somebody in your family to go through, problems with that. So education is important too, as you have a family or within your family. If people don't talk about it, then you really don't know what your risk is. The other things we really don't know about, if the parenting style, if we think we have great parents, but we don't have good parents, or, maybe the parents are always working or, trying to provide for their family, aren't always around to kind of create protective factors for the students or for the athletes, that can create a greater risk for addiction. Environment is definitely a huge one. If you're in a place that's lower socioeconomic area, where there's drugs and alcohol everywhere, or if you see on billboards, there's always, here in Michigan, if you go south of 8 Mile, it's right in Detroit. The billboards are all malt liquor and Budweiser and everything like that. And then you go north where I'm at, and there's no billboards, or if the billboards are up, they're for schools or they're for, other things. They're not for drugs or alcohol. So the environment's going to play a huge factor. So I guess the important thing is to understand is that we really don't know who's at risk for addictions. And just knowing that the different factors all play a risk in who becomes addicted or who doesn't become addicted.
All right, so on that same note, how much do you think you can control? Because I was walking by the elementary school or the middle school, whatever it is over here, the other day, and there's these fifth graders talking about, I like the way Bud Light Lime tastes. I'm like, really? They could be just trying to say something to be cool, but I mean, they probably have had that at their house at some point, their parents, or they just stole a drink, whatever, from a party. But how much can, students control those factors?
That's a tough one. I mean, I think it all becomes part of the education process and parenting education too. Part of the community coalition is we try to get as much information as possible to our parents. We try to educate them, on the risks of providing alcohol or providing, drugs to their students. In our area, alcohol is our number one used substance, and we have a large, I don't want to say problem, but we do have parents that think it's okay for their student athletes to drink if they're being supervised by the parents. And that's really not a good thing. Even though they are being supervised, you don't know if you're setting up your student for a future addiction, because the risk of addiction actually starts between about 14 to 21 years of age. Your brain's still developing at that point. And if you're using a substance that's, your body starts kind of becoming used to, then it creates an addiction. So, like I said, it's part of the education process. It's trying to educate them and let them know that it's not a good thing, that it's not helping their body, and to say something cool isn't always a great thing, So, like you said, they're fifth graders, and who knows if they're saying it just to be cool or if they really had used it, but that process definitely needs to be part of the educational process.
So as you're talking about the educational process, getting the stuff out to the parents, what is your favorite resource to send people to?
We have a lot of resources on our website, bbcoalition.org. But the other place I like to send people to is the NIH. And that's a government website. It's the National Institute of Health. There's plenty of information there for not only just, drugs and alcohol, but they have a lot of information about different injuries and, sicknesses, things like that. But there's a wealth of information at the NIH. And they do a lot of information. They do a lot of studies on drug and alcohol abuse.
All right. Now we're going to kind of change. We're still talking about mental health here, but yesterday I went home. My wife was not having a good day. It was just a rough day. The kids were picking, my 3-year-old Sam, he is the sweetest kid. But sometimes, I think the kid can just talk for like 24 hours straight, right? And that really wears on his, my wife some, you know, it's like, oh, I just want a minute of silence. And so then I started thinking, well, what about these kids that are end up pregnant in high school? Well, end up, but, you know, obviously they made the choice, that get pregnant in high school and then they decide to continue sports after they give birth or, you know, in the early stages of pregnancy. Dealing with being a parent, how does that play into? Do y'all look at that at all?
You know, I haven't had to deal with that at all. But, you know, I think trying to find appropriate stress relievers, you know, I can't empathize with how that must be. But, you know, having a child that's kind of always going. But it's trying to find the appropriate amount of help, I guess, to kind of deal with that and making sure that you're having time by yourself and being able to relieve stress. That kind of answer the question.
Yeah, I was just wondering if you guys had, you know, looked at the mental health as far as pregnancy, or is it mostly focused on drugs,
addiction? Yeah, we've mostly focused on drugs and alcohol and athletes, so we haven't really dealt with that type of you know, I guess problem in our area.
You know, I mean, because we do have some athletes that have a baby and then they come back and finish playing sports during high school, right. And so I'm just wondering how they, you know, dealing with the mental health as you were talking about playing sports and then still going home, having to do homework and having to take care of a kid and that kind of thing. And if there's something that we need to look at, and it's probably still the same, just look at them face to face, engage them. How are you doing? And if they say, I'm just so exhausted, or, you know, I can't even think straight cause my kid was up all night, or, you know,
right.
This kind of thing. So I guess it goes back to what you said multiple times is the communication is the key there and listening.
Yeah. And referrals, you know, like I said, we do a great job of referrals, you know, making sure that we are either partnering with or knowing, our mental health providers in the area. I've partnered with two different psychologists. One of them is a certified trauma specialist and another one's just a family, interventionist. So, you know, either partnering with or knowing different, psychologists or mental health professionals in the area is a great resource to have. You know, if there is a case where you need to send somebody off, you know, like I said, if somebody sprains their ankle or blows out a knee, we're going to send them to an orthopedic. You know, we're not going to send them to, or we're not going to try to treat it on our own. You know, we're going to get them to the appropriate help. And I think if we're able to do that and you have that resource, it's a great thing to have.
Okay. So how do we go about partnering with a psychologist? Because I spoke with a sports psychologist, but it wasn't a good conversation for me. And so it was really hard to relate, like very dry. And so I honestly couldn't recommend that person to an athlete because I didn't feel comfortable just with me talking with them. And there was not, as far as I knew, nothing wrong with me. So how right. do we go about finding those and establishing that relationship?
You know, it's just trying to get out and, you know, if you have to open up a phone book and start making phone calls. You know, I was lucky with the first psychologist. I worked with her in the, with the community coalition. We still communicate when it comes to family issues. You know, I've sent a handful of student athletes to her. So that's been a great, you know, deal. Another one, I actually lucked in on, he runs a podcast in Detroit. And he talks mostly about sports. And I kind of came across his podcast when he was talking about concussion education. And he kind of talked about everything that, you know, I've communicated with, and he seemed very knowledgeable. So, it was just kind of reaching out to him and asking if he wanted to, have a conversation, and it was a great conversation. So I can imagine if I met with somebody, I know there's been doctors that I've had communication with, or I've talked to, and I've just walked out of their office saying, I'm never going to use this doctor just because I didn't feel comfortable with them, or I didn't, you know, have a good conversation, you know, or they didn't provide me lunch. You know, that's always been a helpful thing. But, you know, it's how comfortable are you working with that person is going to be how comfortable you are going to be with sending an athlete to them.
All right. So just real quick, give a shout out to that podcast too. Is that, do you remember the name?
Yeah, it's the Detroit Sports Podcast, Detroit Sports Podcast, and I believe it's DetroitSportsPodcast.com, and that's John Macaroon, who's our team psychologist.
All right, cool. So, you know, maybe we can listen to some of those, learn a little bit from him, or even interact with him, you know, because like I got people on the live show here. Maybe if he has a live show, we can jump in there and ask questions. Hey, how do I go about doing this or something like that? Or maybe I'll reach out to him and have him on here to kind of discuss building that relationship. So very cool. Mm-hmm. Detroit Sports Podcast, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. All right. So guys, check that out and see if that helps you understanding the psychology and the mental health and things like that. A question from Tiffany is, in Texas, we no longer require health or to graduate. Do you think that the increase in drug use is partially contributed to the lack of education through the health class in the schools?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think it is. You know, it's, you know, I don't want to speak too much on it because I'm not part of the education process. I'm an athletic trainer in the high school, but I definitely see the increase in drug use. We run a survey every 2 years within our high schools. You know, so we see the increase in different types of drugs. The good thing is that we're seeing that tobacco is almost, nobody really uses it anymore, which is a really good thing. So we're seeing that certain things are going down, but, you know, even here in Michigan, the importance of drug abuse and prevention education is going down. I think they have more and more that they're asked to talk about and talk about in their health classes. And, you know, in Texas, I guess if they don't have health classes, that can lead to it. You know, you're missing out on a big time frame to educate student athletes. And if they don't get the education, then they're going to go out and experiment on things.
All right. So hopefully that answers your question there, Tiffany. So you talk a lot, you know, you're working with the coalition, and you're also working with the Professional Development League, the Michigan Bucks. Is the information that you're giving out completely different when you're dealing with the Professional Development League soccer versus the high school versus the junior high?
You know, not necessarily. It's going to be very much the same. To be quite honest, I'm probably going to get more questions on alcohol in the PDL than I'm going to get in the high school. I'm actually going to probably get more, you know, like performance enhancing type questions at the high school level. But, you know, the questions about drugs and alcohol definitely come up in high school. But for the most part, really, it's not much different. It's just a little bit, I guess the only difference is how I kind of change my tone or how I deliver some of the education.
All right. So let's just try something here. Let's say I'm one of your athletes. I'm in your training room and I say, all right, Seiko, what do you think, you know, what are your thoughts about alcohol? So then we're just gonna have this conversation kind of like I'm a student and I'm gonna try and act like a student and you're gonna try and respond as you would.
But I think the first thing is, you know, I'm not gonna be able to stop you. You know, if you're gonna try it, you're gonna try it. But I think the information you need to know is that you're still growing. Your brain's still going. Yeah, you may feel that you're kind of a grown up right now, but you have to make the right choices. Your body's not ready for alcohol, even though you may feel it is. There's going to be more of a disadvantage to using it than actually using it. If you want to be at the best of what you want to be at, you know, you have to understand that alcohol is probably going to take about 2 or 3 days for it to actually get out of your system. You may feel better the next day or a day after that, but it takes a lot longer for it to get out of your system than I actually think it does. And there's no actual benefit to using alcohol or drinking.
But wait, my dad said that if I drink beer after I've been sweating a lot, it helps replace the stuff that I lost. Is that right?
There's no scientific research to that. So, you know, there's nothing that says that beer is helpful for you. You know, if you're going to drink anything afterwards, we're going to talk about proper hydration and proper nutrition. Alcohol is actually going to dehydrate you a lot more than anything else, especially after a competition or after a game or practice. So we want to make sure that you're getting the right nutrition in you.
But he does that all the time. I'll go play on a Sunday, go play soccer, and then to come home, have a beer. He seems fine. He seems fine to go to work.
Well, your dad's old enough to do it. That's the important thing to understand is that your body's still growing. You're still developing. Your brain's still developing. And your dad's old enough, and he's able to actually do that. So,
but, man, all right. All my friends are doing it, though, so.
Well, just because all your friends are doing it doesn't mean that you have to do it. You know, let's make good choices here. You want to be a leader on the team. You want to be, you know, you want to go play in college and do the best you can do. So why, you know, if you want to set those goals for you, how does alcohol help with achieving those goals? It really doesn't at all.
So is it any alcohol or is it just beer?
Any alcohol.
You're killing me, Seiko, killing me. All right. So I can imagine it would play out something similar to that. And then, you know, I think you were just, like you said, one thing I say to my kids all the time is you don't have to do anything, but you're always responsible for the consequences of your actions. So if you choose to do that, you're responsible. If you choose not to do that, then you're responsible for the good consequences that come from there. So I think that's essentially how you started off the conversation and then just, you know, gave them a little bit of information and said, you know, hey, you're going to have to choose, but here's why I think you should not.
So. Right. Absolutely. It's definitely all about choices. And, you know, the more information you have, the better choices you're going to make in the end.
All right, cool. What are you working on right now for the coalition?
We've put together what's called the Student Athlete, the Alternative to Athletic Suspension Program. You know, we see that student athletes, I'm sure you guys have already seen, you know, if a student athlete's suspended from a sport because of drinking or drug use, they kind of drift away from the sport. So if you have an athlete that's, you know, a star on the team or a starter, they're not necessarily playing anymore. Who knows that they're going to show up to practices. The Alternative to Athletic Suspension Program actually allows them to continue on with their sport. They're able to participate and go on. But instead of just suspending them for, you know, 10 days or, you know, however many games as part of their code of conduct, they have to go through a month-long education process. So they sit down with me. We meet, you know, regularly. They go to what's called the MADS Victim Impact Panel. They go to different AA meetings. And really all we're trying to do is get them real life experiences so that they see how choices affect people in the end. You know, almost always our students, you know, 17, 16, 17 years old are going through these programs. And they sit down at a table with a room full of alcoholics that say, you know, I started drinking when I was in high school. I started drinking at your age. And, you know, unfortunately you have people that have lost everything and, you know, they have to walk to meetings. And for students to hear that and say, okay, this is happening in my neighborhood. This is a person that lives around me, you know, and that started drinking at, you know, around my age, you know, this could happen to me. It gives them that real life experience to be like, okay, I need to step back from, you know, this activity and maybe I'm not learning the right things or the information that I'm getting isn't the right thing. So for them to understand that is a huge, huge, you know, educational process for them. And, you know, we see a big turnaround from those students that, you know, even if they were leaders, they become more of a leader. They become more goal oriented and they're able to be the ones that another student athlete is able to walk up to and say, hey, I'm going to a party tonight or I'm planning on drinking tomorrow night. You know, what do you think about that? And instead of having to, you know, talk to, say, me or a coach or somebody else, they're able to sound it off of another athlete. And that athlete who's kind of gone through all that whole thing, you know, now starts spreading the message of, you know, not using drugs or alcohol.
Gotcha. Yeah. The peer-to-peer is definitely the most influential at that point. So if we were interested in doing something like that, then how would someone go about kind of starting that, the Alternative to Athletic Suspension Program?
Feel free to go to our website, the Birmingham Bloomfield Community Coalition. It's bbcoalition.org. And you can talk to us there. You can send us an email, and we'd be happy to help get you started there.
And so each of those students comes and, they'll meet with you or meet with a representative from the BBC.
They would meet with a representative. We're actually in the process of kind of getting that Alternative to Athletic Suspension Program out. You know, we've kind of partnered with another school in another community, but it's definitely something we want to try to make a little bit bigger within the area. And if we were able to get out to every high school, I think that's it's a great alternative to a suspension rather than just, you know, punishing somebody for something they did, you know. We're in an education system. You know, I think our number one thing is to educate. You know, working at a high school, we need to be teaching students, and if we can teach them why they did something wrong instead of just punishing them is a huge thing. And we'd love to be able to come out and help. So,
yeah, I think it's, you know, again, this isn't political, but I think it's similar to our prison system is, you know, we send them away, and if we don't train them, they come out worse. But if we train them and give them something to do, you know, if we teach them a skill, teach them a job, then they can usually return and be a productive, if they choose to be a productive member of society. And that's absolutely essentially what you're doing.
You know, the hard thing is that it's hard work. It's a little bit more, but I think the outcome is greater rather than just, you know, sending somebody to jail or prison. The outcome is much greater on the back end rather than, you know, just kind of putting somebody away.
All right. Anything else you're working on there with the coalition?
No, that's about it right there.
It sounds like
you know, we're working with our middle schools, and we're in our big middle school transition program right now. So we're going out to different high or middle schools and helping out. But other than that, it's just trying to keep up with our education so that we're able to get out with everybody.
All right. What's the middle school transition program?
What we do is, like I said, every 2 years we do a survey throughout the whole high school, so we kind of find out what the social norms are. We go out and talk to students about peer pressure. We talk to them about drug use, and we talk about perception of use, which is huge. If students think that other kids are using, they're actually going to use more. But in reality, no, you know, the perception of use is much higher than actual use. So if we get that out, let students know that they don't have to use when they go to parties, or you know that parties aren't such a norm, or we try to get that information out to them. We bring high school students with us so that they are able to ask questions, you know, what's high school like, what's lunch like, you know, are there bullies, types of questions like that. We get that information out to them.
Man, that's a busy day on top of all the athletic training stuff that you got going
yeah
on. But
yeah,
you know, I mean, that, like you said, we're in education, and if we're wanting to do the best, so often in athletic training, I feel, or in the last several years, it's been about reactive or treating an injury rather than preventing an injury. And that's what you're trying to do here, is prevent something, which should be the greatest strength of our profession, is preventing injury through education. And that's exactly what you're doing, though it's not about movement patterns and correcting those movement patterns. It's about life choices, which ultimately lead to, you know, injury or bad choices or whatever. So,
yeah, absolutely. You know, it's all about prevention. You know, we, like you said, we've all kind of stepped away from it a little bit. It should be our greatest asset. You know, and you know, how many of our students are going to actually go on and play professional sports, or how many students are going to go on to play college? It's really not that great of a number. So, you know, making sure that they're productive members of society, you know, that should be our kind of number one goal, and preventing certain things, you know, to try to get them out, you know, it should be a priority of ours.
All right. What are you doing right now to celebrate National Athletic Training Month?
I am trying to be more proactive on social media. We've got a great communications director here at our high school. So she was able to put together a lot of the banners and posters that the NATA put out. She was able to print out nice big ones for me. So my athletic training room is full of posters, and I'm also trying to get out more on our Twitter page and my own, but I'm trying to be more proactive on social media. So as much as I can.
Gotcha. You know, that's cool. And, you know, this is a whole lot of work doing this podcast every day, because right after this, I have to stop it, kind of edit out, add in the stuff, post it, and then get ready for tomorrow. And then, but the thing is, I've really enjoyed this so far, and we're only 9 days in, minus the weekends. So I think we'll see how it goes out the end of the month. I might try and do something similar again. You know, we started off celebrating the 200th episode of the month, but I really like the podcast today, giving the information out, really getting with this podcast. You know, you're there in Michigan, you're connecting with me, you're connecting with, you know, I got people in Tennessee and well, basically all over the globe, because like I said, Caleb, who I'm talking to next Friday, is in China, right? So he listens, and he's there in China. He'll be listening to our story here. people in Hawaii, all over Texas, that kind of thing. So it's really cool for me to be able to connect these people and bring this great information. So I'm excited about how this is going out, how this is going so far. And I look forward to what we have going forward.
Yeah, like I said, I think you deserve an award for this month, man. You're crazy. If you think I'm busy, man, I can imagine what you're doing.
And actually, at the end of the month, which is pretty cool, we are going to be hosting for our third mass CPR training. So what we'll do is we'll take the whole freshman class and teach them CPR. We don't certify them, but in about 4 hours, we go through the compressions using an AED, doing conscious choking, the back blows abdominal thrust. They see the video. They talk to EMS where they have what to expect when to call 911. And we'll have somebody who's performed CPR and somebody who has been saved by CPR here to talk to the kids as well, saying, you know, this is why it's important. We'll have some rescue vehicles out. So I'm pretty excited about that. It's our third year to do that. And, you know, at the end of this, it'll be about 2,100 kids at my high school that have been taught CPR. So at the end of next year, that's 2,800 kids. And that should be more or less every student that's gone through high school at the end of March next year has been taught CPR. So it's a pretty cool way for me to finish out National Athletic Training Month here at Pasadena. So
that's great.
All right. Any last thoughts on recognizing some mental health issues or drug addiction?
You know, I think we kind of covered it, but it all comes down to communication and listening. You know, it's having that opening listening style and to be able to communicate, you know, what you need to with the student athlete or what they're trying to say to you and understanding what they're asking and giving the right amount of information. You know, if they want to come to you about a family problem or if they're coming to you about a potential drug or alcohol problem, it's directing them to the right amount of care too, or the right appropriate care. So communication is huge. It's big in all parts of our profession, but you know, when it comes to this, it's kind of paramount. So, you know, understanding and talking to our students it should be the number one thing.
All right. So again, I read an article called, it was something about saying the looking face or the listening face. And like John pointed out earlier, if you have your screen in front of your face, then you may be listening, but they're not perceiving you as listening.
Right.
And so stop what you're doing, you know, turn and face them. Or, you know, maybe if it's you're standing side by side with the person looking out at the baseball field and the kid's talking to you, that's okay. Because sometimes guys communicate better not looking at each other, but when they're kind of doing something together. So if you're watching a baseball game or sitting on the bench at the basketball game, something like that, but not putting something else in the way. So being available, intentionally available, when they come in to talk to you, even if it's just to come in and sit in your training room and annoy you, right? You can just stand up, engage them in a conversation, and you can guide and direct that. And that's something that, you know, we've always kicked people out of the training room. No, you don't need anything. Get out, get out, get out. But over the last few years, I've learned, you know, just let them come in, hang out. And then they're going to talk to me. They're going to tell me what's going on. I'm building that relationship, and that improves and increases that relationship that I'm building with other kids, because now those students trust me and they're going to be like, why don't you go talk to Jackson? Why don't you go talk to Doc? You know, that kind of thing, rather than right. Like, man, they're always mean. They're always kicking us out. They're always yelling at us. Well, no, you know, I don't want you in here causing a ruckus, but I want you to feel welcome to come here and talk to me. So
absolutely. Yeah.
Be intentional. All right. This episode, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/mentalhealth. John, why don't you tell us how we're going to get a hold of you? I know you have the Bloomfield High School Sports Med on here on Twitter. So that's BHHS Sports Med. So it's B, two H's, two S's, being in the sports, and then med. So that's one of them. But why don't you tell us some of the other ways to get a hold of you?
My personal Twitter is John Cico. So J-O-H-N C-I-E-C-K-O. My email is jcieco@bloomfield.org. And then the Community Coalition website is bbcoalition.org. That's the best way to get a hold of me.
All right. And then one of the other websites you mentioned was nih.gov.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. And so that has a lot of information about the drugs and alcohol and stuff so that you can help educate your athletes. So definitely That's check it. Those out. Hit up John. John has been a pleasure to talk to you. And real quick, make sure that you register for the sportshealth.com/SMB gift card. So Sports Health gives a gift card away every month. I know Carlos won this month, and you know there's been several others since we started. So make sure you know the keyword is Bubba for March, or for April is Frio. And which brings us to, you know, I was talking about Frio hydration at the beginning there. So John, any chance you're coming down to Houston in 2017?
2017. There's always a good chance. I don't know.
All right.
I don't know.
Well, if you happen to be presenting in Houston, then definitely let me know. And who knows, maybe I can record it or something like that. So, yeah, all right. Well, it has definitely been a pleasure. SportsMedicineBroadcast.com/mental health. That's where you hear this episode from John. I'm Jeremy. Almost every single Wednesday we have a show during month. We're going crazy and having one each school day. On Twitter, I am PHS Sports Med, PHS Sports Med. So for Jeremy, for John, that is a wrap.